The church's music from the 20th century. The 17th century. The 11th century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Most of the time, there's not an effort to engage in your argument in any good faith. People will just paint you as a homophobe. So it really just kind of narrowed and shriveled the bounds of discourse.
My grandmother used to say, don't be so open-minded that your brains fall out. There are some scholars who would really like something to be true who unfortunately become too open-minded, too uncritical.
If I'm looking inside myself for strength, it will fail, but that's not actually where my strength comes from, that Christ is greater than my heart.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
Look, it is not unusual, especially in the early stages, and we still are somewhat in the early stages of a presidential campaign, for things to happen, for shakeups to occur, for campaign managers to be fired, so to speak, or for the whole campaign to be restaffed. That happens on a regular basis every time we attempt to, on both sides of the aisle, every time we attempt to elect a president. You're just trying to do the very best you can. It is unusual to have such a remarkable financial disparity between the two front runners. In the case of Donald Trump, reported by the New York Times, just a little over $1 million of cash on hand. He's talking about funding his own campaign from his own bank account. Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, has proven to be what everyone thought she probably would be, essentially a mint when it comes to fundraising, probably going to break all kinds of records by the time we get to the general election. So what's going on here? We're going to be getting our update on the November elections with Mark and Molly Hemingway. Welcome back to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Mark and Molly on the November elections, Pastor Chris Roseborough will join us. We'll do This Week in Pop American Christianity Today, Narcissistic Hijacking of Bible Stories. You can join us with questions or comments or call-in number on this Wednesday afternoon, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc, and our Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the November elections and our weekly update, Mark Hemingway. He's senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
And Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. Molly, welcome to you.
Great to be here with you.
Let's talk a little bit about probably the headline for the Donald Trump campaign, and that has to do with his New York meeting with conservatives, with religious leaders. Mark, what happened there? How would you tell the story?
Well, Donald Trump, obviously, if you look at the polls, and we've discussed this before on the show, one of the most significant pockets of resistance to Donald Trump within the Republican Party are active churchgoers and devoutly religious. So I think the Trump campaign figured that they needed to go out there and really, you know, make an effort to reach out to those people and, you know, get religious leaders behind them so that, you know, they could, you know, present some sort of, you know, serious commitment and endorsements that might sway people who are religious voters who are opposed to Trump. Having said that, I'm not really sure that this big show that Trump put on yesterday with these religious leaders is going to be this, what he needs to lock down this particular vote. A lot of the leaders that, the evangelical leaders, you know, there's some big names there that, you know, went to the meeting with Trump and came out saying some positive things about him, but a lot of them are also kind of from the older generation, and I don't think it's kind of the last gasp of a lot of big names in the evangelical and Christian world, people like Ralph Reed and Richard Land and other people, and I'm not sure that that is going to be persuasive to a lot of younger voters, especially younger religious voters and younger Republicans.
Molly, what do you make of it? It seems as though Trump could walk away from this kind of patting himself on the back, but some of the religious leaders who gathered with him may catch an awful lot of heat, and I'm thinking in particular of Jerry Falwell Jr.
Well, the meeting was interesting, and it was sort of preordained that the whole purpose of the meeting was so that you could come out of it with this strong statement of evangelical support. I knew people who were at the meeting. They are not necessarily Trump fans. They're also not necessarily Trump opponents. They are working for organizations where their own boards, their own donors, their own staff might be divided on the issue of whether you support Trump or not. And I talked with a bunch of them yesterday after the meeting, and they said he still hadn't sealed the deal. So while you are going to get a lot of people announcing that they have finally agreed to support Trump or whatnot, I think there are a lot of people who, they might not be in a position to say it publicly, but they felt that he didn't assuage their concerns about him or his candidacy. But someone who has always been a strong supporter of Trump is Jerry Falwell Jr., and he was instrumental in organizing the meeting and tweeted out his support with a picture of himself with Donald Trump, and he and his wife took the picture with Donald Trump, and it was interesting because right behind his wife, and Jerry Falwell is president of Liberty University, has very strict modesty codes for the women who attend and whatnot, but right behind the picture of the wife was a framed Playboy from when Donald Trump appeared in Playboy. So people were either getting a kick out of it or they were sort of disappointed in Jerry Falwell for being someone who should care about personal morality and opposition to pornography, but proudly tweeting out a picture that included a porno mag in the background.
Mark, how do you explain the kind of the courting, in some cases, like Jerry Falwell's guys, the courting of Donald Trump, what appears to me to be the courting of Donald Trump, by, as you said earlier, kind of the vestiges of the moral majority that have survived mm-hmm. somehow into the 21st century?
Well, I don't know exactly how. I mean, I think, you know, part of it is for personal reasons. I mean, these are people that maybe haven't felt particularly relevant politically in a while, and you know, that was kind of their bread and butter, was, you know, bridging the gap between politics and religion for a long time, and they had a lot of clout in politics because of that, and they haven't necessarily been a force on the national political stage for a number of years, and this is sort of a, you know, like I said, a last gasp for them to come out and, you know, appear relevant. And I mean, I don't want to, you know, put the worst construction on things, but, you know, that would explain why they could go against their, you know, personal long-held beliefs about, you know, necessary virtue for, you know, public officials and having made a big deal about that for their entire careers.
You know, I think there might be some theological issues in play, though, where there's a certain type of evangelical that very much values temporal power and temporal success. And when you look at the names of the people who are signing up with Trump, they might be more inclined to focus on those earthly matters and earthly power than the higher things. Even, you know, just by nature of being evangelicals, they might already be predisposed toward those temporal issues.
And I think, you know, if you really want to put the best construction on it, I think that there's a lot of people that have convinced themselves that, you know, Hillary Clinton winning and, you know, appointing liberal Supreme Court justices at a, you know, at a dangerous inflection point for religious liberty and other things like that could be, you know, a catastrophic event for the American church. But they can't come out and say that, like, I'm only supporting Donald Trump because I believe that, as awful as he is, he's marginally better than for the church than Hillary Clinton, the Democrat.
Wait, why couldn't they? That seems like the perfect thing to say because it's actually probably the most true thing.
That might be, but it's not the kind of thing that's going to get people to the voting booth.
Really?
You know, I think that you have to give people an affirmative reason to go out there and you know, vote for somebody, or at least, you know, they view that that would be the best thing to do to get people excited about voting, rather than simply saying, you know, vote for this guy, he's not as bad as the other bad person. You know, I don't know. But, you know, again, I am trying to put the best construction on this rather than simply say that, you know, they are, you know, personally invested in having some sort of political relevance.
Mark and Molly Hemingway are joining us for our update on the November elections. Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, and Molly Hemingway, senior editor for The Federalist. We'll have about another 10 minutes with them on the other side of the break. When we come back, the Trump campaign. First of all, there are financial problems. There's also staffing problems. We'll find out what they mean after this.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Do you have a student finishing up eighth grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting our weekly update on the November elections with Mark Hemingway of the Weekly Standard and Molly Hemingway of the Federalist. Mark, we've talked about this before, the Trump campaign, and Molly, I want you to chime in as well. The Trump campaign kind of failing to plan for a general election. It's reported by the New York Times today that they have $1.3 million on hand as opposed to somewhere upward of $40 million, I think, for the Clinton campaign, sitting with cash on hand. Plus, there have been staffing shakeups in Trump's campaign. Tell us what you make of it.
Well, I've been saying this all along, you know, for months. Trump, you know, ran this incredibly unorthodox Republican primary campaign, and against all odds, it worked. He got a ton of free media coverage, and he just seemed to coast through the primary, winning a plurality of voters. He didn't have to win a majority of voters in most states. So, but never did I get any sense from the Trump campaign that they understood that the general election was a wildly different thing that needed to be approached in a very different fashion than a primary campaign. And now we're seeing the fruits of this. Donald Trump has $1 million on hand. The New York Times is also reporting that I think he has one staffer in New Hampshire and no campaign office in Nevada, which are two important swing states. I think at one point a week or so ago, it was reported he had 30 national campaign staff. I think I remember reading that when Hillary Clinton announced for president over a year ago, she had over 30 staff already in place just in Pennsylvania. I mean, this is amazing. I mean, there are certain things you have to do to run for president of the United States, and you have to have a baseline infrastructure for a campaign. And Donald Trump doesn't have that at all. And to give you an idea of like how crazy this is, Molly and I recently had the opportunity to speak with David French, the National Review writer who's being floated as a potential independent run. And, you know, he was telling us that, you know, he would have had, you know, a known, you know, with all due respect to Dave French, is a wonderful and qualified guy, you know, a guy that has virtually no name recognition. He would have started his campaign with substantially more money than $1.3 million. And, you know, here Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee, is, and he's got nothing, no infrastructure, no money, and he expects to win. It's ridiculous.
Molly, what were your thoughts?
Well, there were signs that this was going to be a problem in the primary battle, not just in terms of how he was able to accomplish his win without doing the hard work of fundraising, which is, you know, this horrible part of the political process, but that he really suffered in states where he didn't have any organization, and he still has no organization, and that is going to be a major problem. I mean, there are all these battleground states, all these states that you have to win that require, you know, months upon months of thought about how you're going to actually secure the state, and he doesn't even have an office set up in the state, like Nevada and whatnot, Nevada. And this is something he's going to have to correct. It's the one thing I would say, everybody in D.C. says that when they found out these May fundraising numbers and when they saw the campaign shake up with Lewandowski, you know, he's in, he's out, he's in, he's out, they think that this is such a disaster that it's going to be a blowout of epic proportions. And I would just say that Trump has managed to surprise everybody thus far. He cares only about winning. He has mocked every Republican who failed to win the presidency as a loser and a weakling. So we know how personally invested he is in not just winning, but, you know, decisively winning. So I'm just at least open to the possibility, and I know it sounds kind of crazy, that he does have a plan, or that he really is worth the money that he claims he is, and that he'll just self-fund the operation, or any number of things that might correct this problem before it's too late. I'm at least open to that possibility. It is certainly getting late.
I have to ask you, Molly, if he just opens up his own coffers and there's sufficient funds there, he even said in the New York Times piece, unlimited funding, if he just opens up his own wallet. What does that do for his supporters who kind of like the fact that he doesn't have to go to ask anybody for any money?
Yeah, well, that's it was such a mantra during his primary campaign that he was beholden to nobody, that he didn't need anybody's money. Unlike everybody else, they had to say things because they needed money and whatnot. So I sort of thought he should self-fund his general campaign. I actually I think there are two problems there. One, he probably doesn't want to throw good money after bad, and two, he probably doesn't actually – he's probably not worth what he claims he's worth. But there's another thing about fundraising, though, which is it suggests that you actually are part of a larger community. You build up support not just through individual donors but through business interests and whatnot. And there is a really bad crony capitalism side of things where you do become beholden to the people who are funding you. But at the very least, it would be nice for him to be beholden to voters who need to step up and support him. But that doesn't seem to be happening.
The problem here, though, is that whenever these like self-funding issues have come up, Trump has been kind of disingenuous. I mean, I guess he has given the campaign some money, but he did this thing during the primary where he gave the campaign money that was to be paid back with, you know, loans from other fundraising, you know, which was, you know, a very disingenuous way of saying that you're self-funding if you're paying yourself back with other donations. He had to be shamed into making this, you know, supposedly multi-million-dollar gift he had promised to veterans charities, I just don't think that he's worth the money he says he is, and to the extent that he is worth a lot of money, it's bound up in buildings and other assets that can't exactly be, you know, liquidated. I mean, the idea that Trump is going to have some crazy fire sale, you know, overnight, and he's going to generate the $750 million at a minimum he would need to run a campaign that would be competitive with Hillary Clinton is just preposterous. It's just not going to happen. So, you know, you've got to do something here. I mean, I'm all in favor of looking at unorthodox ways of running a campaign and trying to find ways to do things differently. But like I said, you have to have some baseline level of infrastructure for get-out-the-vote efforts, for campaign ads, and for, you know, just basic things. And Donald Trump thinks, you know, he thinks that in a general election, the media are just going to give him free airtime endlessly to spout the, you know, things that he wants to say the way they did in the primary. You know, he's already had an incredibly rude awakening about this.
Oh, so that was the point I wanted to make, too. I think that's very important that he was able to accomplish what he did without a fundraising operation because he had the complete support and help of the mainstream media throughout his primary battle. And there is something that happened earlier this month where the media, for some reason, and I actually don't quite understand it, they all kind of turned on him. And now they're being dismissive, they're being openly disdainful. And so the thing that helped him get the Republican nomination has now turned against him, and the money is all the more important.
Let's talk a little bit about the Clinton campaign. First of all, there is a story from MSNBC, I believe, a survey of Sanders reporters. Remember Bernie Sanders? Yes, he's still there. Sanders reporters are, about half of them are at least saying they're not going to support Hillary Clinton if Sanders isn't there. What are your thoughts, Mark?
I am skeptical of these reports, and I get that people are upset. I get that Hillary Clinton is unlikable, and I get that even Democrats acknowledge that she's corrupt. But when it comes to the Democratic Party and the institutional forces that, you know, are used to get out the vote and put together voting coalitions, the Democrats tend to always have their incentives aligned in a way that the Republican Party doesn't. Which is to say that a lot of the grassroots Democratic groups that are involved in winning elections are heavily dependent on public funds or unions and other things like that that are dependent on having Democrats in power to do them political favors. So either they hang together or they hang together, depending on whether Democrats win or lose. Whereas Republicans, you know, it's like herding cats. I mean, there are a bunch of the elite donor class of Republicans who are like Wall Street Republicans that have all sorts of, you know, weird priorities on social issues and financial issues that may be at odds with the typical Republican voter in the hinterlands that are pulling Republicans in different directions. And then there's just flat out a lot of corruption among Republican campaign operatives that, you know, it's real easy to get on board a campaign, you know, from the grassroots level on up to the very highest levels of the Trump campaign and you know, use it as opportunities for graft and corruption. And, you know, that kind of came into play with the Trump campaign that we saw with the shakeup. I mean, I think there was some accusations flying around, I don't know how well substantiated it were, that his campaign manager, Corey Lewandowski, was finding ways to enrich himself in ways that Trump did not approve of, you know, using Trump's name. So, you know, the incentives for Republicans are, you know, not aligned, and the incentives for Democrats are aligned. And I have a feeling by the time we get to November, at least enough of Democrats are going to be pulling together to get Hillary elected. And, you know, it might be an incredibly low turnout election because everybody's disenchanted with both candidates, and maybe it won't take as much of an effort, but Democrats will probably pull it together.
Molly, let's talk a little bit about Hillary Clinton, the campaign in terms of their future plan. She wants to have a short list of five going into the Democratic National Convention of potential running mates, but the one that seems to be kind of bubbling up to the top of the list is Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren. Tell us about her.
Well, that really ties into what Mark was just talking about with the Bernie Sanders voters and picking Elizabeth Warren, who is just a darling of the progressive left, to be one's VP would be a real olive branch to those Bernie Sanders supporters who are struggling to get on board the Hillary Express. So she is very much a grandstanding politician. She's positioned herself as someone who cares about consumer protection, which for her means a pretty serious regulatory regime. She's not well liked by her colleagues, I don't think, but very much liked by the progressive left. And she reinforces what Hillary thinks her strengths are, such as being a female. And so that I think she's a very strong contender for the vice presidency. One thing I thought was interesting in media coverage this week is that earlier this week she threw just an absolute hissy fit temper tantrum where she quoted her fellow senator, Chris Murphy, saying that Republicans, by not voting to restrict Second Amendment rights by imposing limitations on people who are on an extrajudicial secret list that would prevent these people who have no knowledge of being on a list, but would prevent them from having their Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. She said that Republicans who are opposed to this violation of the Second Amendment and the Fifth Amendment of the Bill of Rights are selling weapons to ISIS. This is a type of histrionic, you know, freak out and very uncivil. And it was interesting to see how little our mainstream media seemed to care about it. Last week, you had John McCain saying that President Barack Obama was in some part responsible for the Orlando shooting because he had not dealt with the threat of ISIS. The media flipped out on John McCain. You had Donald Trump suggesting that there was something weird going on with Barack Obama's lack of passion in fighting ISIS terrorists. And they said, he's accusing Barack Obama of being complicit in the Orlando attack, and they freaked out. But nobody really freaked out about Elizabeth Warren out and out saying that Republicans, you know, represent a majority of voters in this country, are selling weapons to ISIS. So there's that double standard again in how the media treat these different people, but that's the type of person Elizabeth Warren is, really riles up her base.
Well, I just wanted to add that, you know, Molly's right that Elizabeth Warren would be an olive branch of aggressive left and, you know, certainly amplify certain of Hillary's strengths. But the fact that Hillary Clinton is even considering Elizabeth Warren also reinforces the fact that the Democratic Party is not in a good way right now, and they do have to kind of stitch things together, which is to say that I think Elizabeth Warren also doubles down a lot of Hillary's negatives. You know, she is, again, you know, she's not a great campaigner. She's kind of shrill in the same way that Hillary Clinton is. And, you know, further, she's a darling of the progressive left, and she's gotten elected in a very blue state, Massachusetts, as senator. But at the same time, if you actually look at her record since then, she hasn't exactly been, you know, true to those quote-unquote progressive values. You know, she was supposedly the scourge of big banks and corporations, and yet in the Senate she supported the Export-Import Bank, which is like one of the most ridiculous forms of corporate welfare out there. And the Center for Financial Protection Bureau, which was her baby that was created in the Obama administration supposedly to protect Americans from predatory banking practices, has had all kinds of, you know, problems from the get-go. Everything from they spent something like $200 million redecorating their new offices that raised a lot of eyebrows, to the fact that they have had a lot of really questionable regulations, and the banking industry and a lot of, you know, financial interest that Hillary Clinton is probably counting on would be really opposed to having Elizabeth Warren demagogue them in a position of power. And so, you know, I don't know. I mean, just having two very liberal older women on the same ticket, you know, might just also not be very appealing, to say nothing of the whole thing with Elizabeth Warren claiming to be Native American, which was a status that she used to benefit herself in academia repeatedly. And she has never given a full account of why she, you know, didn't exactly tell the truth about her supposed Native American heritage. So, you know, it is a good choice for uniting the Democratic Party. It's also a choice that I don't think Hillary Clinton would like to make if conditions were ideal.
Finally, Molly, let's talk a little bit in the last few minutes here about the fact that in a 90-minute deposition, Hillary Clinton's IT specialist, Brian Pagliano, invoked the Fifth Amendment 125 times. What does this tell you?
Well, the invoking your right to not incriminate yourself by talking to federal investigators is certainly something that one can do, but it really speaks to the seriousness of the charges around Hillary Clinton. We're in a really weird situation where the more we learn, and we knew this pretty much right away, actually, with this email scandal, but the more we learn about it, we learn that this was a serious violation of regulations and laws governing the handling of classified information. And if you talk to federal employees, no matter how liberal they are, they're absolutely appalled, and they know that if they were to have handled information as carelessly and as deviously as Hillary Clinton did, you know, this overt effort to hide her work from oversight and from her agency and congressional oversight, they would be in prison for a very long time. And there are prisons full of people who have done a really bad job of handling classified information, even inadvertently, and they are punished so seriously you wouldn't believe it. At the same time, I think nobody has any expectation that the Obama Department of Justice will do anything about this rather egregious law-breaking. And, you know, this FBI that just redacted the transcript, censored the transcript of Omar Mateen's 911 call is not exactly the model of transparency or justice or competence or anything like that. I don't think anyone expects Obama's administration to actually do anything about Hillary Clinton. So it's a very weird combination of more and more evidence of very bad management of classified information and lawbreaking, but no expectation that there will be justice served.
The other issue here is it's not just the very evident crime of what Hillary Clinton did, it's the cover-up. I mean, at every single stage of this quote-unquote scandal, Hillary Clinton has said things to defend herself that have been proven untrue. You know, she said it was perfectly fine with the State Department and keeping the State Department policy and everybody was informed. Well, whoops, it turns out that was not true. Well, she said that there weren't any classified emails on her private email server for hackers to get into. Well, it turns out there was lots and lots of classified emails. Well, then she said that she didn't know that they couldn't possibly have known there were any classified emails or they're all retroactively classified because they didn't have classified markings. Well, it turns out there were emails with classified markings. I mean, you just go down the line and it's been one lie after another. And it's just really amazing that we're in this situation where we're unwilling to enforce the rule of law here purely for politics. It is completely, you know, Obama just came out and endorsed Hillary Clinton. It is a completely obvious conflict of interest, and it's completely obvious that the current Attorney General, Loretta Lynch, is not in a position to defy her boss publicly on this. And this is a classic example of why we need an independent prosecutor to look into this. There's a specific mechanism for this we've used in similar instances. And, you know, nobody's going to, you know, put any pressure on Obama from the press or anything to do the right thing here and hold Hillary Clinton accountable.
Folks, you can stay informed on the November elections by reading Mark and Molly Hemingway's columns. You'll find links at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark Hemingway is senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Molly Hemingway is senior editor for the Federalist. And Molly, you'd be very happy to know the Cards swept the Cubs in that Chicago series. Just finished their final game up there at Wrigley. Cards over the Cubs 7-2.
Wonderful news.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time doing our weekly series, Pop American Christianity Today, Narcissistic Hijacking of Bible Stories. Pastor Chris Roseborough will be our guest, host of the Daily Internet talk show called Fighting for the Faith. Stay tuned.
Not only does our church need men right now, but the world needs men who will proclaim the gospel in its purity.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Peter Scare, Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
If when you go to sleep at night you're thinking about it, my experience with it is this, is that thought won't go away. So if you're going to bed at night thinking about following our Lord and becoming a preacher of this gospel, then I would love if you could come and visit Fort Wayne, our campus. We'd love to show you around and show you what it is that we do.
Have you ever considered becoming a pastor? Contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Christ-centered, cross-focused, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
No gimmicks, no shticks, just straightforward preaching and teaching in accord with Scripture and the Lutheran confessions. By the book liturgy, right from the hymnal. No glitz, just Christ crucified for sinners like us. We're Grace Lutheran Church in Racine, Wisconsin. Come receive God's gifts with us. Find out more about us at Grace Lutheran Racine, that's all one word, .net. And like you, we're proud supporters of Issues Etc.
your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.